had shot off to work, Donna asked Tad why he had put the chair back in the closet with the blankets on it if they had scared him in the night. Tad looked up at her, and his normally animated, lively face seemed pale and watchful. Too old. His Star Wars coloring book was open in front of him. He had been doing a picture from the Interstellar Cantina, using his green Crayola to color Greedo. "I didn't," he said. "But, Tad, if you didn't and Daddy didn't, then I didn't."
"The monster did it," Tad said. "The monster in my closet."
He bent to his picture again. She stood looking at him, troubled, a little frightened. He was a bright boy and perhaps too imaginative. This was not such good news. She would have to talk to Vic about it tonight. She would have to have a long talk with him about it. "Tad, remember what your father said," she told him now. "There aren't any such things as monsters."
"Not in the daytime, anyway," he said, and smiled at her so openly, so beautifully, that
she was charmed out of her fears. She ruffled his hair and kissed his cheek. She meant to talk to Vic, and then Steve Kemp came while Tad was at nursery school, and she forgot. And Tad screamed that night, too, screamed that it was in his closet, the monster, the monster. The closet door hung ajar, blankets on the chair. This time, Vic took them up to the third floor and stacked them in the closet up there. "Locked it up, Tedder," Vic said, kissing his son. "You're all set now. Go back to sleep and have a good dream." But Tad did not sleep for a long time. And before he did, the closet door swung clear of its latch with a sly little snicking sound. The dead mouth opened on the dead dark. The dead dark, where something furry and sharp-toothed and clawed waited. Something that smelled of sour blood and dark doom. "Hello, Tad," it whispered in its rotting voice, and the moon peered in Tad's window like the white and slitted eye of a dead man. The oldest living person in Castle Rock that late spring was Evelyn Chalmers, known as Aunt Evie by the town's older residents, known as that old loudmouth bitch by George Mira, who had to deliver her mail, which mostly consisted of catalogs and offers from the Reader's Digest and prayer folders from the Crusade of the Eternal Christ, and listened to her endless monologues. "The only thing that old loudmouth bitch is any good at is telling the weather," George had been known to allow when in his cups and in the company of his cronies down at the Mellow Tiger. It was one stupid name for a bar, but since it was the only one Castle Rock could boast, it looked like they were pretty much stuck with it. There was general agreement with George's opinion. As the oldest resident of Castle Rock, Aunt Evie had held the Boston Post cane for the last 2 years, ever since Arnold Hebert, who had been 101 and so far gone in senility that talking to him held all the intellectual challenge of talking to an empty cat food can, had dotted off the back patio of the Castle Acres nursing home and broken his neck exactly 25 minutes after whizzing in his pants for the last time. Aunt Evie was nowhere near as senile as Arnie Hebert had been, and nowhere near as old. But at 93, she was old enough. And as she was fond of bawling at a resigned and often hungover George Mira when he delivered the mail, she hadn't been stupid enough to lose her home the way Hebert had done. But she was good at the weather. The town consensus, among the older people who cared about such things, was that Aunt Evie was never wrong about three things. The week when the first hay cutting would happen in the summertime, how good or how bad the blueberries would be, and what the weather would be like. One day, early that June, she shuffled out to the mailbox at the end of the driveway, leaning heavily on her Boston Post cane, which would go to Vin Marchant when the loud-mouthed old bitch popped off, George Mira thought, and good riddance to you, Evie, and smoking a Herbert Territon. She bellowed a greeting at Mira. Her deafness had apparently convinced her that everyone else in the world had gone deaf in sympathy, and then shouted that they were going to have the hottest summer in 30 years. "Hot early and hot late," Evie bellowed, leather-lunged into the drowsy 11 o'clock quiet, "and hot in the middle." "That's so?" George asked. "What?" "I said, is that so?" That was the other thing about Aunt Evie. She got you shouting right along with her. A man could pop a blood vessel. I should hope to smile and kiss a pig if it ain't, Aunt Evie screamed. The ash of her cigarette fell on the shoulder of George Mira's uniform blouse, freshly dry-cleaned and just put on clean this morning. He brushed it off resignedly. Aunt Evie leaned in the window of his car, all the better to bellow in his ear. Her breath smelled like sour cucumbers. Field mice is all gone out of the root cellars. Tommy Nideau seen deer out by Moosuntic Pond rubbing velvet off in their antlers ere the first robin showed up. Grass under the snow when she melted. Green grass, Mira.
That's so, Evie? George replied, since some reply seems necessary. He was getting a headache.
What? That's so, Aunt Evie?
George Mira screamed. Saliva flew from his lips.
Oh, aye,
Aunt Evie howled back contentedly.
And I seen heat lightning last night late. Bad sign, Mira. Early heat's a bad sign. Be people die of the heat this summer. It's gonna be a bad un. I got to go, Aunt Evie, George yelled. Got a special delivery for Stringer Bull U.
Aunt Evie Chalmers threw her head back and cackled at the spring sky. She cackled until she was fit to choke, and more cigarette ashes rolled down the front of her house dress. She spat the last quarter inch of cigarette out of her mouth, and it lay smoldering in the driveway by one of her old lady shoes, a shoe as black as a stove and as tight as a corset, a shoe for the ages.
You got a special delivery for Frenchy Beaulieu? Why, he couldn't read the name on his own tombstone. I got to go, Aunt Evie, George said hastily and threw his car in gear. Frenchy Beaulieu is a stark natural-born fool, if God ever made one,
Aunt Evie hollered. But by then she was hollering into George Mira's dust. He had made good his escape. She stood there by her mailbox for a minute, watching him go. There was no personal mail for her. These days there rarely was. Most of the people she knew who had been able to write were now dead. She would follow soon enough, she suspected. The oncoming summer gave her a bad feeling, a scary feeling. She could speak of the mice leaving the root cellars early, or of heat lightning in a spring sky, but she could not speak of the heat she sensed somewhere just over the horizon, crouched like a scrawny yet powerful beast with mangy fur and red smoldering eyes. She could not speak of her dreams, which were hot and shadowless and thirsty. She could not speak of the morning when tears had come for no reason. Tears that did not relieve, but stung the eyes like August mad sweat instead. She smelled lunacy in a wind that had not arrived.
George Mira, you're an old fat,
Aunt Evie said, giving the word a juicy main resonance, which built it into something that was both cataclysmic and ludicrous.
Fat!
She began working her way back to the house, leaning on her Boston Post cane, which had been given her at a town hall ceremony for no more than the stupid accomplishment of growing old successfully. No wonder, she thought, the goddamned paper had gone broke. She paused on her stoop, looking at a sky which was still spring pure and pastel soft. Oh, but she sensed it coming. Something hot. Something foul. A year before that summer, when Vic Trenton's old Jaguar developed a distressing clunking sound somewhere inside the rear left wheel, it had been George Mira who recommended that he take it up to Joe Camber's garage on the outskirts of Castle Rock. He's got a funny way of doing things for around here, George told Vic that day as Vic stood by his mailbox. Tells you what the job's going to cost, then he does the job, and then he charges you what he said it was going to cost. Funny way to do business, huh? Then he drove away, leaving Vic to wonder if the mailman had been serious or if he, Vic, had just been on the receiving end of some obscure Yankee joke. But he had called Camber, and one day in July, a much cooler July than the one which would follow a year later, he and Donna and Tad had driven out to Camber's place together. It really was far out. Twice Vic had to stop and ask directions. And it was then that he began to call those farthest reaches of the township East Galoshes Corners. He pulled into the Camber dooryard, the back wheel clunking louder than ever. Tad, then three, was sitting on Donna Trenton's lap, laughing up at her. A ride in Daddy's no-top always put him in a fine mood, and Donna was feeling pretty fine herself. A boy of 8 or 9 was standing in the yard hitting an old baseball with an even older baseball bat. The ball would travel through the air, strike the side of the barn, which Vic assumed was also Mr. Camber's garage, and then roll most of the way back. "Hi," the boy said.